OTB AM. All right, just a few weeks after their All-Ireland football 5 in a row win, I'm delighted to say that the Dublin selector Paul Clark joins myself and Tommy in the studio now. Good morning to you, Paul.
Good morning, thanks for having me.
Thanks, William, for coming in.
Cheers.
Dublin selector, what does that mean anymore, selector?
It's coach as well, isn't it? It's coach,
yeah,
selector.
I suppose my role really kicked off at the O'Byrne Cup a couple of years ago with the team travelling away. And I'd have been fairly close with Jim and he approached me and said, look, would you be interested in taking the O'Byrne Cup? We're away on holidays. And, you know, like it's everything you really want, you know, as a player playing, and then you help coach your club side or help around coaching different teams. Then I was involved with Pillar 2005-2008. So I seen that side of coaching a county setup. So to be asked to sort of put your hands and be involved with the county team and be in charge, but it was something really special, and I couldn't turn it down because it was Jim, you know, because I'd be very, very close with him, very friendly with him. I thought it an honour. So we had a couple of years doing that, and a couple of players came through the ranks. You know, we won it 1 year. We put ourselves in a bit of trouble drawing a game in Parnell Park. We had to go down to Wexford then and win by 17 points or something like that. So that wasn't unlikely to happen, you know. And then last year we got to the final again. So I'd been involved, and maybe it was a bit of an apprenticeship or something like that. And then Jim, you know, maybe seeing how I worked and operated. And I was very lucky to work with Jim Brogan, who was a selector for me when I was playing with Dublin back in 95 and that. So it was great to touch base with him and have his insight into things.
I saw you compare yourself to Sam Allardyce after the first year or two. You get the win and then right off into the sunset. It wasn't like that, Paul.
You won't see me off now in Spain.
Pints of wine.
Sam Allardyce, no thanks.
But I saw you also, you were challenging the notion that it was a third string Dublin team that you were looking after when you were over the Suburban Cup team.
Yeah, like, I suppose people are going to say that anyway. But like, the way I sort of looked upon it was like, if God forbid something was to happen to the team and away on holidays and they could never get back because there was a volcano or a hurricane, that the squad of players that we had would have to step up and play maybe National League. Now I know that's extreme circumstances, but like they're the best guys available, and a number of times clubs had the foresight or were brave enough to contact the county board to say, look, we have a player who's played particularly well during the league or the championship, and why not give him a run out, you know? And we brought guys into the squad that may have never played minor or under 20 or 21s at the time, to give them the opportunity. And like they were excited about it, they were energised, you know, everything about their timekeeping and their respect for what we were doing, their questions, their energy for it was really high, you know? So you could see that there was a bit of a drive to try and push and you know, show that they were capable of playing at county level.
So that wasn't something like you needed to challenge, that was something that actually just they arrived that way, sort of, they were hungry, they were...
Yeah, well, like, you know, like as it now stands, the club championships are getting to the high point of the seasons, you know, you're now to quarterfinals, semi-finals and finals over the next couple of weeks, so you're looking at the form of players and fellas are going really well, but then, you know, you'd look to see can you bring them into a county setup, which if it is the O'Byrne Cup, then that's the first opportunity that they're gonna get, you know. And you might have a few guys who did really well with maybe the under 20s this year. Is a chance for them also to go into the senior setup and see what's needed, because there is a step up in standard. You're playing against full strength county teams. You know, there is bigger requirements and expectations, so there is some pressure on you as well. So we just see how they respond to that.
We saw a lot this year with, we're probably going to come back to it a little later with the Dublin squad and probably the competitiveness around the squad and maybe A versus B games. But like the likes of Sean Bugler, Patrick Coffey Byrne, who you mentioned was on the fringe of the panel. The manner in which Jim Gavin threw Cormac Costello in into the All-Ireland final a couple of years ago without having much game time earlier that year. Like, it's obviously a massive thing, the early days, those O'Byrne Cup days. You called it an apprenticeship earlier on. You never answered Adrian when he asked you to start. What exactly role was at Dublin this year?
You know, like it is a big, it's a management group as such. You know, Jim in charge, and and with Declan and Jason and myself. Declan and Jason are extremely good coaches, you know, and they've been there for a number of years, Declan more so than Jason, but they work very closely with Jim. They understand him and he understands them. You know, my role is to come in, was to do a little bit of work maybe with our fielding aspect, improving our fielding, maybe work a little bit on kickouts, and just to be a foil for the other guys, you know, if a fresh set of eyes, a fresh set of lungs, different opinion maybe on what's going on, you know, like the theory that if you remain the same and do the same, people will pass you by. So if I could come in and see something a little bit different and add to it, so be it. If nothing had to be said, well then you don't say it, you know.
There is that Brian Cody approach to, in some degrees, where he'll refresh up his backroom staff every couple of years to keep things fresh. So I don't know if there's like a shelf life now. I've been in there a couple of years that you're watching your back a bit, but
yeah, well, like, you know, everybody's life goes on outside of football as well. You know, so like you give it so many years, and you know, the challenge, like a player as well, it's a challenge to commit to it,
yeah,
because you've outside interests, whether it be family or work, you know, and it is a juggling type of thing, and those other aspects have to unfortunately take a back seat during that time of the season when it's full on. So, you know, it may not be, you know, a decision of yourself. It may not be management. It may be life decides, well, look, it's very hard to keep all this going, and you have to prioritise what's important to you at the time, you know.
Was it the start of 2018 then you went in with the full squad when everybody was available and championship and all that sort of stuff? Is that right?
Yeah, it was the start of the National League, post O'Bourne Cup. You know, National League, I would finish up the O'Bourne Cup and then I would do a small report for Jim, just give an insight into the players, how I thought that they interacted, how they responded, their attitude. You know, like it's a tough time of year to be asking guys start of the year and bringing them up to Innisfails and putting them into the dark nights and wet nights up there and seeing what they have to offer, you know. And again, it's a juggling type of thing. They have to get off work, they have to get up there nice and early, they want to be on time, you know, they want to perform well. And like you're trying to give them an insight as to how a team is prepared, the type of you know, information you might be giving them, you know, pre-game or post-game or during a game, how we want them to respond to how the game is going, you know. So like if you're talking to before the game, it's the same type of thing, whether it's a World Cup, National League or Championship, you still try and keep the same type of standard about it, same type of style about it, so you see how they respond.
Like, would you have had, so to keep that same style or that same philosophy, I suppose to use that word, like, would you have had to have taken a brief then from Jim almost beforehand to say, listen, like, here's what I want to get out of it, here's the report I want to get in the end?
That's, I think Jim sort of gave it, like, an open book for me to sort of fill in myself. But like, as I said before, Jim Brogan was with me, and Jim had worked with Jim before. And, you know, Jim Brogan is just a great guy, you know, he's a great guy to have around. His energy had never changed, you know. Like when you're playing and you have a management team, and ours was Pat O'Neill, Jim Brogan, Fran Ryder and Bobby Doyle, like they're four different people. Yeah. Like you're never really going to get on with all your management team. You're going to get on with some of them. There's some interaction is purely professional sport. Others is how are you getting on at home, how's the family, and that. So, you know, I would respect that every manager ever played underneath, and I would respect that group of management that helped us get over the line in 95. So if I'm asked to get involved with Jim, or Jim is coming on board with you, how do you feel about it? Like, open arms and just delighted, because I know what the man could bring to it, you know. So where I might have been the front of it, Jim was certainly driving this on, you know, Jim Brogan. And it's just a great energy about him, and just the words, you know, I could stand back and let Jim give a little bit of a talk about a game or what we're going to do today, and you'd want to be playing. I'd still want to be playing for him, you know.
Get out there, put
so
the shorts
he,
ne- on,
he yeah. never lost that, you know. It was just brilliant to have him on board, and obviously he knew, having worked with Jim, the type of stuff that was required.
The boys in '95 have been mentioned a lot the influence on the 2019 win this year and the last couple of years. But just kind of listening to it and reading about it the last while, there has been a serious amount of continuity with Dublin GAA and I suppose the legacy that's been created there. Like, it's 25 years since you captained the Dublin Miners to an All-Ireland title. Like, Dublin football has been a massive part of your life.
Actually, it's 25 years since we won the senior.
Oh, it's longer. It's
84.
It's 35. That's bad math on my part. But like, that's an awful long time to be involved in Dublin football. You know, before you won that All-Ireland 95, you'd played in three All-Ireland finals and lost before that as well. Like, is it 95 that has had the influence, or is it before that?
I don't know. Like, I was playing soccer for my younger years, and then I went to St. Aidan's Christian Brothers School in Whitehall, and my best pal was Micheál Crowley. It would have been Jim Crowley's son. Jim would have played in Dublin during the 50s, you know. And just a bad day at the office, I was playing soccer with Home Farm, and I went into school. My father said, go and talk to your best pal, like, from primary school. He was playing Gaelic, I was playing soccer. So I said to Mick, I said, what do you think? So I was only 13 and I started playing Gaelic then, but it was through Brother Coffey, who was our teacher in St. Aidan's, and I started. And within a couple of months, I was fortunate enough to be on a Dublin under 14 side.
Okay.
So to me that was the start. It was that meeting with Brother Coffey and the talk with Mick Crowley, what should I do, you know, as in football and Gaelic wise.
Yeah.
And I had a Dublin jersey soon after. So every day to me, to be involved with the setup, any setup at Dublin is just something special, you know. I just feel very fortunate because there's probably better managers out there, there's probably better coaches out there, there was probably better players when I was playing that didn't get the chance, you know, and there's probably better players, and there definitely is, that never won an All-Ireland, you know. So I just feel very fortunate. Is it my upbringing? Is it the coaches that I had when I was under 14 and under 16 in Whitehall, or when I was a minor with Whitehall? Is it Alan Larkin when I was the minor captain? So I just feel I was fortunate. And then the different groups that I was involved with. So that's the way I see it, you know. It's always been a pleasure. It's always been a bit of an honour and a buzz to do it, you know.
Like, frequently people talk about the comparisons between what was it like as a player to win the All-Ireland and now what was it like to have been involved in the coaching staff, which is like an impossible question to answer in some ways because there's no straight answer to it. But like, maybe the fairer question on your part is, because you mentioned earlier on, obviously you were there in the early 2000s under Pillar and you'd been through it. Like, obviously there was a long barren spell for Dublin at that point. Is the setup then and the setup now, are they just chalk and cheese? Is everything just totally different?
Totally.
Right.
Like, I've seen it during the night. Obviously, I started playing in October of 85 was my first senior match. So, I seen what was going on then. And you'd go to a National League game and you'd ask one of the subs, would you be a linesman?
Right.
You know, I was linesman at a National League game down.
You know, you're not getting on once you get the flag.
You get the flag, yeah. Well, you know, but that was then, you know. Yeah. And then during the 90s, there was a different type of approach, a little bit more toward a professional. Fran Ryder came in and looked at a different side of things, our fitness wise. You know, we were a really fit side. And we'd lost a couple of All Irelands, we'd lost a four in a row to Meath, we'd lost a couple of semi finals. So they were really, really tough times, you know, really, really tough times to sort of think that you could still go to the well again and try and get a victory, try and win something, you know. Was the campaigns better or easier? I love the cut and thrust of winner takes all. I love that, going head to head against somebody
and you had to win it. Yeah.
You win it, you're through. If you lose, you're out type of thing. And then obviously with Pillar, I got to work with him again. Some great guys in the management team, Brian Talty, Ski Wade, Kieran Duff, you know, the great Dave Billings. You know, we're all very fortunate to
good chatty there. To work. Ray Boyne, I think, as well.
Yeah, and Ray Boyne, you know, so like that was a, like, me aside, like, I was the weakest in that team. Look at the three of those tough men, you know. Like, if you go into a scrap with them, you're going to be quite happy, and all really good footballers. And it all given great time to Dublin football anyway prior to that. So, you know, that was a group of players that probably, I don't say you deserve to win it, like, you win it because you've put in more work and hard work. There were some really good teams around, the Mayos and the Thrones and the Kerrys were still, you know, forcing us down, you know, and we didn't get the breakthrough at that time. So I, as a young guy, like I was still 40 or just around that age, I was involved then. I thought, well, that's it then.
Yeah.
You know, like I've had my
moment,
chance.
Yeah.
And as a coach, the players give you everything they can, but as soon as a new manager comes in the door, they turn and they want to work for him, you know. So you felt a bit alone, bar like the friendships that I made. Like, and I mean, I probably made more and better friendships through that group of management probably than I did when I was playing, you know, just for the reason that we were in each other's company an awful lot during that time, you know, post-training, we would eat together, we would chat together, we would talk, you know. And that's how it worked out. And then to see, and we had some really, we thought they were revolutionary ideas, but they were never brought in, you know, having a strength and conditioning coach in the Dublin County Board or to do something like that. We had Daniel Tobin, and Daniel was later brought to Leinster Rugby, and he's with Gloucester now in the rugby over there. And we had him as our sort of strength and conditioning coach. And we thought it was a great idea to have him with the County Board. The funding wasn't there, the foresight to do it.
This was the early 2000s, was it?
This was with Pillars Group, yeah. And then we were looking at little different deals with different, you know, companies. But we didn't have that business acumen. You know, look, I was Airport Police Fire Service, Pillar was a guard, Talty was a teacher, Kieran Duff worked as a linesman telecom. So we didn't have that business acumen. Yet when we left and the next manager came in, did have that. You know, he did have that sorted.
Pat had that?
Yes, okay. He had that business idea, and he was able to bring that structure and get in, you know, a proper structure and the funding, and then look at get this development, this Dublin development idea behind the underage, you know, getting really good coaches with the underage teams. So that's where it started then, you know.
There's a huge amount of conversation, obviously, about the money stuff, and it's come up with some of the players over the last few weeks as well, and I can understand from, you know, why within the camp you would view that as a negative commentary on the team, right? That, like, we're only achieving this thing because all this money has come in and we're allowed to have all these roles and these people and provide all... What's your view on how that... Dublin have obviously used that money cleverly and wisely, and, they're, you know, all the games officers that are around the schools and around the clubs and all that stuff. Like, it's seems like a very smart thing that a lot of other counties could be doing. But regardless, what's your take then on the money that's come into Dublin over the last few years to facilitate, I suppose, you guys?
Yeah, I don't, like, I'm not saying I'm negative about it, I would force a background like that. Like, you know, there's investment that has come in and it's been invested very wisely. But, you know, when I see the errors that Guy has put in, whether it's part of the management team, whether it's our backroom team, or whether it's players, the errors that they put in to sharpen their axe, to improve their skills, to analyse opposition and prepare for things. Like, there's absolutely nothing. I don't think you can put a price on that because it's so detailed. It is so detailed. It's unbelievable. It's frightening. I would be old school. You know, I've said I'd love to play knockout games and that's it. To see what guys put in nowadays.
And what is that level of detail then, Paul? Is that like you're talking about sort of GPS data, and is that
that's in your own team? But, like, you know, like if you want to know your opponent, you have to look at your opponent. You know, like, you have Sky Sports, you have RTE, you have GA Go, you have every media covers games. So, like, if you want to look at your opponent and see how he plays or what he plays like, you know, you just have to put
are
in.
You
the
doing
time.
A lot of that. Is that does that dictate a lot about how you go about your business?
Well, it's important. It's an important element of it, you know, because, like, you have to know your own game and what's right in your own game and the players that you have and playing a certain style, and if things are going well, how you deal with it. If things are going poorly, how you deal with it, and the manner you address it and the emotion that you have during all of this is hugely important, you know.
But I think nearly every county, though, in terms of putting hours in and the amount of stats man maybe and the analysis they're doing teams, like, we would have had Colin Nally in here, the Meath coach, and, like, the level of detail that they went through to prepare for the Dublin team, and he was telling us that when they were playing Yee in the Leinster final this year, they were like, Dublin are just trying things out here, like, we've prepared for all these different things and we haven't seen what Dublin are doing here before. So, like, I think other counties are applying those same measures and they're catching up in that regard, and they're probably putting in the same levels of prep. But, like, I don't know whether they're going to catch up. When you look at the likes of, say, now we don't know what the issues are, but there's problems in the Galway County Board at the minute. There's been problems in the Meath County Board in recent months. Like Dublin just seem to have every box ticked across the board, whether it be from board level down to underage at the moment, that they're in such good stead. They're in such a good position. You mentioned that there was a massive difference in 08 and 05 being involved with Pillar and the teams there. What has been the main difference in that decade since from when you took over as coach again?
We would train. We used to train in St. David's, you know, and it was a great location with a nice gym. You know, the guys could warm up in. You know, we introduced a little bit of stretching and foam roll and that type of thing. You know, the great Davey Hendricks, who's still around, is like our kit man. Was filling ice baths from a fire hydrant, you know, like talk about health and safety. And him running a hose to fill ice baths and carry this. And he's just an incredible guy. He's still there, but he's doing it with even more gusto and energy than he did back then. Even the likes of those small details, he knows what is required. But he's I'm not saying he's a kit man. He's part of that group, but he has that energy. And he's improved, if that was possible, you know.
Okay.
But like after the game, after training, we would head up and have our dinner in the goblet, and you know there was your choice of food, and it was chicken, beef, or fish, whatever, and the boys would take all three and load up the plates. Oh, great! You know, but nowadays, obviously, the detail of your food portions, the size, the quantity, the quality of it, you know, your takeaway meals, even that alone is something important. You know, hugely important. You know,
Can I get into some of the detail of the year maybe as well? Obviously, one of the biggest talking points of the year was the return of Dermot Connolly. Was there ever any doubt about it? Was there discussions about it? Was it a straightforward decision in the end?
I suppose that'll be a question for Jim. And, you know, we were very aware that Dermot was back playing with his club and playing very well. You know, like... I would say, going back to that time at Pillar, he was brought into the panel in Pillar's time, you know, himself and Mark Vaughan, and they could do things with football that I've never, ever seen guys doing before then or since then. They were just incredible footballers, you know, their left and right foot, they could dead ball out of their hands, drop kicks, sidelines, and they would just compete
incredible,
all evening long, the things they could do. And what... the pass that Dermot hit in the All-Ireland final, it's not a freak or a fluke, because that's what he does. And I seen him do that 10 years ago.
I would say that...
Mossy Quinn has been getting it for the last 10 years as well in club football.
Just move wherever you want. The turnover was better.
Absolutely.
Than the thing. Yeah. Then a guy was standing on and he squared him up, bang, hit him, the ball spilled up, and yet he still had... the control of his emotion.
Yeah.
Like some fellas would go,
after
flattening it.
Yeah.
So he had the emotion then to hit this pass.
When the Esther gets rejected, like these are conversations that are being had with you guys. That we need this, that Dermot can bring this, Connolly can bring this. He can play that pass that most players won't try.
No, like Dermot, like as I said at the start regarding the O'Byrne Cup, there's so many players on the radar. Like it's not fair to say, well, look, these are the 35 players, or these are the 20 players we're going to set down, and we're going to see who joins us. Like you really have to open your eye, because the standard of football in Dublin is improving all the time. It may be improving because of the coaches in the clubs. It may be improving because the players are seeing what the county players are doing and they want to do it. They may see it when their county players come back to the club and they see the physical shape they're in, and they're asking, "How can I improve?" It could be the fact that these younger players coming through are in third level education, as you know well, Tommy, in DCU or UCD, and they're just a different, they're a different animal altogether. So like you're always looking out there and see what's going on. Dermot, you know, he moved away from the group by choice, but you're always looking out for the guy. You're always looking out, and I mean that in a really good way. You know, if someone is on hard times, you try and help them out. If someone needs a shoulder to cry on, you help them out. If someone says, "Look, I've something to offer you," well, you're going to have a look at it, you know. So
was that the way it came about, Paul? Whose idea was it? Did Dermot come in, or was it the other way around?
I think it was a continuous conversation. Right. It was a continuous, you know, contact between the two, whether it be phone calls or texts or meetings. You know, and You know, like Dermot managed it really well. I think Jim managed it excellently.
Well, he quietly, his update that day, he quietly dropped it into the goal. You blink and you miss it.
Yeah, and I think on top of that then, mostly of all, is the players had to manage it too, you know, because like they knew Dermot, they knew what he was capable of doing, they knew what he would bring to us. If you were a player that was in the 15 or you were on the fringes and you see another player that's going to compete with you, well, do you sulk and say, well, look, no, there's no point now? Or do you say, well, look, OK, this guy is coming back. And it was going to be a huge step again for him, having been away, even for that 12 or 18 months. To come back into it and get the pace of county football and the intensity of the training, some new ideas that had been worked on, you know, for him to come back and get up to speed was going to be difficult, you know, but he did that admirably.
Was there any disquiet? Were any of them coming up and knocking on your doors and saying, listen,
No. It wasn't like that at all. Like, if fellas were going to take out their anger, they were going to, you know, pull up to each other on the training pitch and see could you be faster, fitter and jump higher or, you know, score better.
You mentioned earlier that fielding, in a general sense, is one of the things you would have been working on with the team this year. Can I pull you back to half-time in the All-Ireland semi-final against Mayo and the 12 minutes afterwards when Dublin post 2-5 or 2-6? And it's one of the most exceptional, I suppose, phases of play that we probably would have seen in the last couple of years, potentially ever. Like, it was just perfection. There was it's been analysed to death, but there was essentially a full court press from Dublin and Mayo just couldn't live with you for 12 minutes. And, you know, Kilkenny's ball to Conn, Keegan slips, there's two goals. For you watching on, what was that? Like, what was that 12 minutes? Like, what was the conversation at halftime? What do we have to do here going out in the second half? Because Mayo had set the tone.
Yeah, well, like, you know, you're dealing with a very intelligent group of players here, you know. Every one of them, you know, understands their role, their duty. Everyone understands, like, if something's not going right, how it's possible to change it, how we can add to that. If one of our players or two of our players just gets on top and starts changing the tone of the way we're playing, you know, the direction of it, well, then, you know, they're able to wade in behind and continue the drive that way, you know. And that was pretty much it. Like, we just got on top, and it's no disrespect to Mayo, but you know, they were under severe pressure, and you know yourself when you're playing a game and this wave comes at you, it's very hard to restart. It's very hard to reset. You actually need, back in the old days, a little bit of a melee or a scuffle. You need, unfortunately, an injury that's going to take a couple of minutes. And that didn't happen. It was score, put the ball down, kick it out, ball win, score. Like, it didn't happen, you know?
Brian Howard would have had a massive influence in the air this year for Dublin, playing wing forward and in and around the middle third.
He's, like, you know, he's a phenomenal athlete. Like, he, you know, the work he puts in the gym, the work he puts in on the pitch, his ability. And he's very lucky that he has a very close friend and confidant in Fento, that the two of them get on so well and they work for each other and help each other. But you know, like when we say we're going to work on our fielding, it's our corner backs and our goalkeepers as well as our corner forwards. You know, that's where we want to see the ball being won in the air, you know. So it's not only the midfield area.
In the drawn final, did Kerry cause you much problems in the air? Did they pose different questions?
Well, you have. You know, one of the best midfielders around for a long time now, David Morden, who has that. Again, Jack Barry showed that he's particularly good in the air. People would have said before, well, this fella is just going to go spoiling Brian Fenton. I think everybody thought that was going to be the case. But he actually contested, won two great balls just before half-time over Dublin players, and it started to lay down a little bit of a marker. So, you know, that's the challenge that you do have. The game is now, you know, it's evolving from let's give the short kickouts to, well, we're going to do a full court press. Well, the keeper's going to kick it over the press if he can, you know. And if you have two guys at midfield that can test our half forwards, you know, be it Brian Howard or Kieran Kilkenny, well, then you're going to try and get the ball to them. But it's then, you know, then teams will find the range and the zone of the goalkeeper where his limits are, you know. So that's the challenge that you still have, you know.
the goal at the start of the second half and in the replay was like that was the ball game essentially, wasn't it? In the end, in hindsight, and the ball was thrown in. Actually, looking back to yesterday, it falls slightly on the Dublin side, and somehow Devon Moran has the opportunity to take this. Like, I mean, he's going to be kicking himself, but that's
yeah,
the rest
no,
of his
it's,
life.
It's something that I would say, I'd always say to the players when they're going for a throw up. Like, if you set your mind on breaking that ball, if you say, I'm going to break this ball,
no matter what happens,
it goes up, and next minute, you've a free chance to catch it here, but you're so embroiled, and your emotion is, I'm going to break it. I'm going to break it.
Mm. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And like his break wasn't even a great break
because
he was caught in two minds.
Yeah.
Whereas if you go up to say, look, I'm going to win this ball cleanly and you go to attack it and it is and it's there to be won cleanly, it's great. But if you go to win it cleanly and you find then I'm in a contest against somebody else, well, then I think you can go from going to catch to break rather than going to break to catch.
Yeah.
You know, so that's what happened.
It was magic.
Because I think earlier in the season, I think we played in Portlaoise, would have been the first round of the Leinster Championship. I think the ball was thrown up and Brian Fenton went up and there was no one there. And Fenton broke it down to, and he could have won it, you know. So that's the emotion that a midfielder has. Yeah. Looking at a referee, how is he going to throw it? Are we going to screen him? Because what happened was, I think in that half time, break was that Jack Barry got hold of Brian Howard and in the grappling with him,
something.
He blocked Fenton.
Yeah.
Whether it was by accident or by, you know, prepared and practiced for it, it worked very well, you know.
Perfectly until he, and you would have thought that, I mean, Devon Moran has mind up to break it, then he's got his teammate on alert that, listen, I'm going to break this ball, but then Merchant is the first one out of the blocks. Was and that a pre-range move that he would come down the middle?
Merchant is out of the blocks, he just said it. That's it, like he's so fast and he's so alert. That was the case for him. Like he just went. I think he went just literally that half step past the Kerry guy to win that ball and just get the bounce of it. You know.
And the Dublin players pulled the Kerry wing backs
just to try and create a bit of space. You know. And again, like a player, you would imagine. Well, I'm a defender. The ball is being thrown up. I'm watching how the play is going to develop. But your sense is, I do not want my man getting on the ball early on. I don't want them getting a score. And they naturally drift out to go with their man, you know.
Well, you mentioned about the reviews and all that sort of stuff. How quickly after games do you sit down and go, listen, right, let's get back in the game here? Whether it was the replay or just general games, are you pretty hot on that pretty
again,
quickly?
Yeah, well, again, like the games are on TV. You could have them recorded. You could be at home that evening watching it if that's the case, you know. And in the same way, if our analyst team have them set up and they forward them on to us, you know, we can look at them nearly straight away.
And are you all doing that yourself, and J.O. and Declan Lally and Jim?
Yeah.
Everyone's feeding into
that. But like I say, Declan and Jason are extremely good at it, you know. It is an art, it's a skill, it's tedious, but you know, you can see their attention to detail when it comes to their coaching, and you know, when they're presented that they have gone through this, you know, it's incredible what they do.
Can we talk to you a bit about the aftermath of the All-Ireland final? We see now, sort of, after every final, the teams will go off to Crumlin and go in and check in with the kids and bring a bit of a lightness to their day. I know it's a piece that you're aware of, Jack McCaffrey, on a couple of weeks ago when you were doing that, and it was put to him the idea that, you know, this puts everything in perspective about sport, and he really challenged that head on and said that actually it endorses the idea that sport is really important, that it's a great release for everybody to be able to invest in that for a little bit of time and take you away from your troubles. It means a little bit more to you than most, I would suggest, going back to Crumlin.
Yeah, like, you know, Jack is a very, very special guy, you know, as I know his dad and Noel is and his whole family. And only himself could come up with that line, you know, that you say that the line is, sport is whatever it is. But Jack... You know, Jack is an incredible guy. He has an off the pitch as well and his doctoring, and you can see him how he deals with kids, and he would have been at home there probably more so with that group than he would be with his football group, you know, because that's how good he is and he interacts. I would know firsthand closely the people and staff in Crumlin, because my own son Ben, when he was born, he had a heart issue, and staff in Rotunda noticed this, and he was rushed to Crumlin, and within 4 days he had open heart surgery, and you know, it wasn't how myself or my wife Eimear had prepared or looking at YouTube and read these books. This is how you do these things. You actually literally just handed over your child to an ambulance man who rushed him to Crumlin, and they did a phenomenal job. And we spent a month in Crumlin while he was healing and recovering, and to see them at first hand, their compassion, their emotion. They're there from the start of the day. They finish their shift. They go home to whatever they have at home, whether it's family or whether it's friends or whether it's just asleep. And they come in the following day with the same amount of energy. And even to the fact of when we could have been on edge in the room, like we might have had a couple of bad night's sleep or Ben hadn't been well for a day or two. Like after a week, they took him back to Tir because he had a hernia, because when they removed one of the tubes from him, a hernia appeared. Right. So he was back in surgery the week after. For a nurse to say, like, okay, you two guys, out you go. Mm. And we're going, sorry, yeah. Off you go, get a coffee. You need to get out of here. He'll be okay with me. You just need to go. And that just a few moments away from it, you think, well, no, you can't do that. But they knew it was the right thing to do at the right time. So, like, when you guys know and think you do a good job, or I think I do a good job in the airport, you know, these people are just phenomenal, you know, and you know, the energy that they give, how they look after the parents is unbelievable. Like the kids, that comes natural to them. The other part just comes part of their whole psyche, that they watch out for you all the time, you know. So the staff in Crumlin were unbelievable, as were the staff in Rotunda.
You're handing over the most precious thing that you could ever possibly imagine. You're at your most fragile.
Yeah.
The work they do is just incredible. Words probably can't.
And at a lonely time, and that when I went to Crumlin that particular night in early morning, I'm sitting outside the intensive care unit in Crumlin, not being able to go in and see Ben. And up the stairs comes Davy Bourne. You know, the only relation I had to Davy Bourne was that I was a captain in 84, and then he later captained the Dublin Minor after a long break. And I knew through John O'Brien in St. Olaf's that we had a little bit of a link, and they brought me out when the Minor Trophy was brought back to Davy's club and all of us, that I went out there as well. So to see him, he was the only person that I could recognise, and he said, oh, what are you doing here? And he was able to give me a Dublin jersey that particular day, and I was like...
That's the morning that Ben was brought into...
That was the morning that we were sitting down, like no one else around, lost for words. Eimear was still in Rotunda, so to have that, that just gave me a little bit of a lift, you know, a little bit of comfort at the time, you know, so forever grateful for that, you know.
That was 2016?
2016, yeah.
How was he doing?
Flying. Yeah, busy. He'll have a go at anything now. He knows the songs from being in Croke Park. He got on the pitch the last day again, you know. He just can't wait for the fireworks when the fireworks go. So he's been very fortunate now the last couple of years to be there, you know. And like, same way, the family group within this present Dublin group is unbelievable, you know. Like obviously Jim has teenage kids, and Jason and Declan and... O'Gara's kids are great. Darren Daly's kids have been really good, you know. So like, there's just that bond amongst them too, you know, that they're starting to become friends outside this greater group. So when we talk about the Dublin family, and that's what it really means to us as well, you know.
What are this group going to go on to achieve, do you think?
I don't know. I can't really say because. You don't know to go again, to push on to the next level, to improve your standards, to not say erase mistakes, but make sure things don't happen like they had maybe in previous games or previous years. You look at the opposition as well. There's lots of changes of management around the country at the moment. And there's some really good strong squads out there that are coming through underage football as well. Strong around the place, so like it's, you know, it's there again. It's there for putting in your preparation. It's there for putting in the hard yards and the hard miles and the work in the gym. And you know, the nucleus of the team are probably, you know, sort of that middle 20s. You know, but you still have your Stephen Cluxons, your Bernard Brogans, your Ono Garris, your Darren Daly, guys who've worked hard for a long number of years. You know, and what they're going to do, And then you have the likes of the Sean Buglers coming through, mm-hmm. or the Darren Gavin, who we lost earlier this year just with a hamstring injury, was really shaping up to be a really good footballer. What has he got to offer?
And it's grim. It's grim for the rest of us, Carl. I'm not going to lie to you.
I'd say I was frightened when I heard Brian Howard say that he's only done 3 in a row and he wants to do his own personal 5 in a row. Like. And then you hear the likes of Kevin McMiniman say adamant that he's not finished with Dublin and that he wants to come back.
Kevin was in unbelievable shape this year, and his whole approach and attitude this year was just exemplary. Like, if a player could look at somebody, I would say, like, say Kevin and the way he behaved, and Bernard as well. Bernard was brilliant, I thought, this year. Within the whole group, you know, they could have easily said, do you know what?
Well, Bernard spoke about how difficult it was.
But he really now put in some...
There's a good shot just up there, the two of you just on the pitch afterwards.
He put in some great shifts, you know, in some of the team meetings.
Yeah.
My wife was happy with that, all right. Makes me look old. Older.
He makes us all look old, unfortunately. And there's some doubt about, I mean, some of those players, obviously. What's been put in place, because we've spoken in good detail about the like process of things, which, again, is a word that's used... in some bizarre way in relation to Dublin, that I think people frequently use it in a non-positive way, but for me, it's I think what's been done there is amazing. But what's been put in place now, with or without Jim, is that something that can now and will now just continue regardless of who's in charge, or is it very much tied around Jim's, I suppose, particular skill set?
Every manager will want to have his own slant on things, you know. Like I'd say. Good luck to the guy who has to try and take over from him, you know. His attention to detail, his honour for the crest, you know, and what it means to be a Dublin manager, you know, to be involved with Dublin is so high on his radar, and yet he has such a high pressure job outside of football that he still can put in the errors and the accuracy in what he does, and how perfect it is as well, you know, it's frightening. So like the guy that has to try and take over from him would have to continue some of the practices and obviously want to put his own bit of a slant on it too, whenever that is, you know. So so that's going to be a good transition.
It's probably unfair to ask you about what his future plans are. That's a question for him, I'm sure. Yeah. But for yourself, you're there at the behest of Jim. Is that the way it works, or what are you thinking?
Well, it is. You know, you have to be there because you know you're wanted to be there. But as I said at the start as well, it is a juggling act. You know, everything else, you commit to the cause. Everything else takes a back seat. Like, I'm very fortunate with work. Like, I'm a shift worker in the airport police fire service. Like, I work with Lindsay Davies. So Lindsay works on the same crew as me. She has to get time off for her footballing as well. So there's always what's the schedule for the men's and the ladies. So we're very lucky, the crew that I work with would cover me all the time or any time that they could. And, you know, and the officers as well have been brilliant. That now I'm in a situation that I can pay back the few shifts that I owe, and I'd like to get that done, you know, because having it hanging over. So it is a juggling thing. Again, you ask family and how they are, because they're the supporters too, you know, like my wife Aim, my son Ben, my own parents too. They have to put up with a lot, believe it or not, because they still go to the games as a supporter, and they hear, you know, whatever abuse goes on or directed at you, you know, and they thought that was all done and dusted when I finished playing, and here I'm putting them through it again, you know. So they may not thank me for it, but no, look, you know, it's an end of year type of thing. You sit down and you discuss how it all's falling into place and whether you can go again or not.
Yeah, and saw the photographs during the week from the reception you got at work as well. They put on a great show for you. So
yeah, brilliant. So very lucky.
You've been brilliant with your time. Congratulations again. Thanks for coming into us. I was going to say every success into the future, but as a non-dub, I'm not quite going to go that far. But thanks a million for coming in, and we'll chat to you again.
Appreciate it. Thanks a lot. OTB AM.